CliffCentral.com.
All right, there's Ruby from the Kaizer Chiefs, CliffCentral.com, on a Tuesday morning. Today is the 13th of October. Yo. Unbelievable. I want October to go slowly. You know, some months you want them to rush. I like October very much. It's so pretty. It's so nice. You get your first summer rains. You get the spring feeling. You see everything in beautiful, bright colors. The garden's green. I spent a lot of money on flowers, which is such a stupid thing to do. But I just couldn't handle it anymore.
Why do you think it's stupid?
Well, see, I don't think it's stupid, or I wouldn't have done it. But, I mean, some people would say it's dumb because, you know, these plants, they might not survive for more than a year. And you've bought them just to make things pretty. I mean, I know you understand that. You would repaint all the police stations. So I know you get what I'm saying. Anyway, so much to talk about this morning. We've got loads.
Wait, are these like flowers for inside the house or outside?
No, outside.
Oh, okay. And you plant? Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, in pots and things. It's looking nice.
Random thing that I've never just been able to get into much are like roses or bouquets of flowers. Like I've never been that sort of person to even appreciate it. And I still think of a routine Celeste Dooley, the comedian, once did. And she said, yeah, you know what? I'm just part of the group of people. Don't give me flowers. Flowers to me, they're two occasions, either a wedding or a funeral. Yeah. Other than that, I don't. Yeah, that's me too.
No, my mother always has fresh flowers in the house and she always makes these beautiful arrangements in her house. But I've got some that are fake. And then occasionally, you know, especially if someone gives me something, like someone brought a gift somewhere in the last 3 weeks and there were flowers there, and I think I threw them out eventually over the weekend. But it's nice to have. They make the room smell nice. They make everything happy. I like it. Makes everything pretty and happy. You need that around you. You know, if you don't have beauty around you, you don't appreciate things.
Why do you think I have so many mirrors in my home? Sorry.
All about how pretty you are, Sia. Yeah. I got you. Oh, man.
No, we could get into news stories. Okay.
All right. Well, first things first, this is really interesting. The 2020 Nobel Prize in Chemistry was awarded to two people who developed CRISPR. And I actually met one of these women.
Really?
Yeah. At South by Southwest in Texas about 3 years ago. I think it was either three or 4 years ago.
I'm going to butcher their names. I know that for sure. Emmanuel Charpentier or Jennifer Doudna.
Jennifer Doudna. Jennifer Doudna. Yes. She explained how CRISPR works. So a brief digression from our normal conversation this morning. And Bulelo will know all about this too, because CRISPR is a gene editing software. What it does, it acts like a pair of scissors and a copy and paste function in on your computer when you're doing a Word document, for example, and you highlight some text and you paste it in.
We know a lot of that from school essays.
Yeah, it kind of works like that. I mean, I'm really oversimplifying it because I don't want to get into too much of the detail, but hearing her speak about it was fascinating. And the things that they're able to do now with this CRISPR technology, it's quite extraordinary. Soon, we will be able to do proper gene editing. There's still lots of things about the DNA in the nuclei of our cells that we don't understand. There's still a lot of confusion over exactly which genes do what. Some we know pretty well are responsible for certain characteristics and features and, you know, responses from the system and protein generation and that kind of thing. But some of the parts we don't understand. And we have all these chromosomes which contain all this DNA. And it's quite extraordinary how much information is stored in the human genome. But we've developed ways of, thanks to technology again, ways of being able to figure out and keep a record of someone's genome, which would have been impossible before. I mean, Francis Crick was the guy who was it that he did it with? I always forget the other dude's name, but he was the first person to really understand the double helix nature of DNA and give us an idea of how it works. how proteins are replicated, how cells divide. And we've developed over the last 100 years this incredible body of knowledge. In fact, it's probably only about the last 70 years, but exactly how genes work and how they facilitate the changes inside our bodies and how they make the proteins that we need in order to not just live, but to keep evolving and developing. And
but also it's very impressive work. Like, these two ladies have been developing this for the past 10 years and they were awarded last week. I don't know if I have the patience for it. Look, that's exactly why I
don't have the internet to develop
something like this.
So you were working on your own CRISPR and then you just decided, oh, I don't have the patience?
Yeah, after about 38 minutes, I thought, not going to be able to do this. But you know, this regardless still also gives me hope. Who knows who's out there right now, who's seeing all of this mess in the world, but isn't fazed because they know they're working on something and might, you know, make things better. Like, imagine 10 years ago, they were working on this. And they were, you know, one of the things that I found unfortunate was that the point of ethics was raised around this.
Yeah.
And they both just sort of said, look, no, it's a decision that's yet to be made. But for now, we're just here putting this together.
Well, CRISPR stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats. Because, of course, you need to know that.
That's why we go with CRISPR. That's better.
Yeah, I suppose where this could be really helpful is in antiviral sequencing and the ability to develop some sort of antiviral response in our cells. I mean, that would be really powerful. All the ideas that people have of, you know, being able to genetically engineer your baby and that kind of thing, there's certain stuff that we're starting to make moves into, but it's by no means possible for you to, oh, I want a male child with, you know, blue eyes and I want it to grow up to be 6'4". You can't do that. Not yet.
But I think we will get to that point. And so what? Who cares? We'll be able to get to drive through babies one day.
Is that what you want? Is that what you want, Sia? You want to be able to design your baby?
Oh, but I know we will get to that point in society. And where are all of the people who are freaked out that President Trump is going to get a Nobel Peace Prize now?
Yeah, well, there we go. All right, let's go to some messages quickly. Robert says this platform is used to create the link between the hosts, but it looks good. Warren says, why can I not hear the song on the video? That's because we're still trying to find a way of broadcasting the sound, because, I mean, I could play a sound right now and you wouldn't hear it, but people listening to the podcast would, and people listening live on cliffcentral.com would. For the video purposes, we're still trying to find a way of sorting that out. Yonder says, morning, guys. Good to see you live. I feel that we should use Cliff Central as a platform to divorce ourselves from the bullshit. Well, that's kind of what we do here. Oh. Janet says, morning. Whatever issues I was having yesterday not being able to see the live video are resolved. Seeing you all is really cool. My sister-in-law is in the police, and we can't always understand why she chose that career. And it did dawn on me that she did her training in 1990. It seems the cops pre-1994 still take pride in their jobs. They seem to be a dying breed, like so many good civil servants. It's very sad. Yeah, I don't know if it actually, if the cutoff was 94. I think that's politically convenient for some people to say. But there are people who still, you know, are going into the police for the right reasons, and there are people who are going into the police for the wrong ones. Let's evaluate them each on their merits and not cluster people together in a collective. Anushka says, I love flowers, Sia, and plants in my home, and they're all alive. Please check out the string of pearls plant. It's the most amazing plant in my home. I love it.
String of pearls.
Yeah. String of pearls. If I look around this room now, I've got two live plants and one fake one. I do like the live, but it's a ball ache to look after them, you know? You have to water them every day.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've accepted. It's just not for me. I will never have a green thumb.
That'll work.
Yeah, and I also don't have the patience for it, so no. All right. I'll give it a pass.
Mluleki wants to know, what are your headphones, Sia? You see, this is what happens when we go visual, is that people ask these very, very pointed and specific questions.
Yes. So,
all right, let's go pointed and specific questions now. Are you ready? Sia, what make are your headphones?
I would like to know, but it was a gift, so I also don't know.
All right. Well, I'm wearing the same studio headphones I wear in the actual studio. I use them for all these things, and they're very hard to find now. They cost a fortune. They're called Sony MDR7506s. I've only ever used these ever since I started.
Sounds good. Sorry,
and then Ange says, Gareth, your teeth look amazing. I don't recall you having.
Ooh.
Yes, yeah. I don't recall you having braces. Which method did you use? Which portions and lotions did you use? So, Ange, we had Dr. Stephen Flax on a while ago. He's the genius. You might be able to look it up. Just look it up on the cliffcentral.com website. Stephen Flax. No relation to Michael Flax, I'm told. But he got me onto this product called Invisalign, which is these transparent aligners that you wear either during the day or during the day and the night. But there are various applications for them, and some people wear them 24/7. They only take them out for meals. And what they do is they just very slowly and gently over a long period of time, for me it was 5 years, they move your teeth into the proper positions. I decided a while ago that not just for reasons of vanity, but also and primarily for reasons of health, it was a good idea to sort out my teeth, because I would have ended up with major problems later on in life. You know, there's nothing worse than an old person who has to have all their teeth chopped out and replaced with fake ones. So it's amazing what they've done. Because I was meant to wear braces when I was a kid, and my poor parents went to the trouble of taking me to the dentist, and you know, you had those molds made, and we had braces made, and I threw them into the river because I just hated wearing braces. I know, it's so silly. My brother and sister wore theirs, and we're lucky. I mean, we've got strong teeth in the family. I just had the worst teeth out of all of us because they just didn't sit properly in my fucking mouth. So this Dr. Flax is, let me tell you something. There are a few people in my life that when I die one day, I will be grateful to have met. And this guy is one of them. So this Dr. Flax is a wizard. He brought this product. I think his daughter owns the franchise in this country for the product. And she deserves it. It's a great product. And you've got to look into it. If you've got kids who have teeth that are not 100%. I mean, we're not all going to have a Hollywood smile. You know what I mean? But if you don't have your teeth aligned properly, you have problems, health problems later on. So get it sorted out. And Invisalign is terrific because it doesn't have to interfere with your whole life. You don't have permanent fixtures on your teeth. You take them out when you eat, for example. You live your life. It doesn't put a stop to this. And I was always worried because my life involves me talking and me getting in front of people and being on the radio. I couldn't hold his braces every morning. And
you didn't speak like Pelosi.
No, I didn't want to sound like Nancy Pelosi. Correct. So
you think these things are small or don't matter, but they really do. They do. Because
when you don't have those problems, you've always had good teeth, right?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, you do. Sia's got...
My milk teeth. Mm. I had like a couple of rotten.
Come on, which we were a little child. But you've got great teeth and you've never had to worry about this. Let me tell you, if you don't have great teeth, it's all you worry about. So it's something to sort out. And you can listen to that podcast with Dr. Flax. We must get him back at some point. He was very funny. He said...
He was very busy when we tried to get him back. He's a busy man.
He's a busy man, especially now because people are trying to sort out all the stuff that they ignored during lockdown. But he's funny. He said that I was the worst case he'd ever seen.
You know, I have a handful of people in my life who really like to take care of themselves. And that's not a bad thing. They can do whatever they want to do. But there was this one lady in particular who... I had noticed she had done something different, but I just couldn't place a finger on it. Mm-hmm. And the whole way through, I hadn't seen her in a couple of months, and she was just chatting away. I was staring at her face going, what have you had done? Because something looks different. And she had reset her upper set of teeth.
Yeah.
And she had like whitened them, like had, what is it called, veneers. And I thought, oh, okay.
Okay.
See, these things, in my opinion, really do make a difference. So if you can afford it, go ahead.
C says, I've over 70 plants in my flat. Only water them once a week, so they're not a hassle in my mind. But that must look beautiful. There's something about live plants in an indoor environment that just is really lovely. It makes it feel, I don't know, lush and kind of alive. And there's lots of things that I like about that. So, Sia, you might want to rethink your position on plants.
No, I think that they're great if someone can maintain them for me.
Hillary.
That's what it is.
Here's uncrooked Hillary, because this is not Hillary Clinton. Uncrooked Hillary sent us a message, says, fuck, braces were the worst. Mine used to live in the pocket of my blazer or jeans, and I stood on them and broke them. Yeah, I remember those things. Oh. Thank God they've developed new technology. No, so that's excellent. Sia's teeth are beautiful, says Crooked Hillary.
Thank you. Thank you, Hillary.
Also,
not according to Stephen Flex, the dentist, because he said, when he came in studio, he looked at me and he says, you have a slight overbite.
Oh, really?
Okay,
but he's very, he's a perfectionist.
Calls it like it is as well.
All right. Robert says, what hair product? You see, now we're just going through like personal care.
The problem.
So Robert wants to know, what hair product do I use? Pointed and specific. Okay. So I can't believe we're talking about this. I actually use the shampoo that the EFF wanted taken out of Kicks. Now I don't know where I'm going to find it. So I use that shampoo, and then I will... this is so boring. I use a leave-in conditioner, and sometimes I don't put anything else in my hair. That's it. And I don't use a hair straightener or a hair dryer or any. I use the towel as I get out of the shower. That's it. If my hair takes longer than 2 minutes to get itself sorted out, then it's time for a haircut.
So I'll remember to bring it up tomorrow when Gord is on. But yesterday we recorded an episode of So What Now, and Gord Laws was one of our guests. And for the first time ever, we actually have guests coming into studio, and Gord was one of them.
Yeah.
So I had to usher him into the studio, and he was so fixated on finding out where you are and wanting to see your makeup process, because he was, no, you know what? I want to see Gareth without any hair products. I want to see what he puts into his hair. I want to see how I can do it as well. It was a little psycho.
Jesus, what's wrong with Gord? We've got to talk to him about this tomorrow.
Anyway,
you will enjoy tomorrow night's show, and tell your friends and family to watch too, because it's about obesity. I mean, to talk about how many fat people there are in this country and what we can do about it. And also, whether or not it's fair to make fun of fat people, whether it's fat shaming, whether it's humor, whether it's tough love, there's a lot to talk about there. And Gord, I'm delighted to say, was a good sport. He joined us on the show. This guy called Elon, who lives in Limpopo, who also joined us. He was terrific. Elon Mohale. And Lorraine Maisel, you know, Law. She spoke to us about her having a stomach stapled. Her bariatric surgery. So if you want to hear all of that, then you can watch the show tomorrow night. Put it in your diary now. We need the ratings, man. That's all I care about. Yeah, Kerry says, when are we going to have Ben on again? I actually saw Ben on Friday. I went out for drinks with Ben. It was terrific. It was really good to spend time with him, and he's as happy as can be at the moment. He's in great shape. He's feeling good. He eats carefully. He's a shining example. We could all be more like Ben. You were going to say, Sia?
No, I was bringing up the Figile Mbalula story.
Oh, yeah. Let's get to that. So anyway, he's been chastised by the ANC. They've reprimanded him because he called Kebi Mapatswe a coward, and he called Carl Niehaus a thug. Neither of those are particularly untrue. But Phule Mabe said that his actions went against the ANC's social media policy. So he's basically been told, listen, you can't just tweet anything you like. Welcome to the world everyone else has to inhabit. Fikile Mbalula.
But also, where does this come from all of a sudden? I'm struggling to understand that.
I want to know where Mbulelo has been for the last 20 minutes. Did you go and take an enormous dump? What were you doing?
I was aligning my chakras.
I know you were sorting out the podcast. It's all good. All right, so you can get hold of us on 0797482090. Let us know what's going on. I was exactly like Sia, says Bronwyn. I had no green thumb. I did some research on easy-to-maintain houseplants, and I found out all about a plant called the snake plant. It thrives on neglect. Sometimes I forget to water it for 3 weeks. I now have four of them. And 3 months later, all my plants are okay. You see, Sia, it's possible. Bronwyn Pillay can do it. You can do it.
I don't want something called the snake plant in my house. That seems a little...
Oh, come on, Sia.
Yeah. That's just weird.
Trevsta Mabazo says, good morning. What is the update on Mabali? Well, Mabali started this group that we're all on WhatsApp. But she said she'd come in. She's got like serious things going on. She's been studying. She's done like a whole life change, Mabali. So she does want to come and see us, but she'll decide the time of that. You know what she's like. When she decides to come in, she'll come in all guns blazing. That's how she is. All right.
Look, you know, yesterday we spoke about the proposed protest by drivers around Bolt and Uber. Mm-hmm. Well, the protest got quite serious yesterday. I didn't even know this. On William Nicol Drive here in Johannesburg, police had to fire rubber bullets at the striking drivers. And these are the drivers who are demanding that the industry be regulated, saying they had been exploited for far too long by some of their companies. Did anyone hear of this in Johannesburg? Because I feel like I missed this.
No, this is the first I've heard of it since we spoke about it yesterday, but I'm not surprised. And again, I fail to find, even if I search my soul, that much sympathy. I'm really struggling to be... kind and considerate and thoughtful and empathetic about the position of people who work for Uber or Bolt. Because if you don't want to work for them, just leave. Do your own thing if you're so clever. If you want to use someone else's IP in order to get work that pays you money, then accept that those people get to determine the nature of the service. And it's a service which seems to work very well for the customer. So the only unhappy party here is the driver. In which case, if you don't want to drive anymore, just don't. Do something else. And don't say to me, oh, that's easy for you to say. But you could be a taxi operator on your own. You could join one of the other federations. There are options available to you. I love the way you think, well, someone in Silicon Valley who developed Uber suddenly has to make it easier for you. Why? What did you do to deserve that?
From the reports, it sounded like it all escalated quite quickly, but then as quickly also just everyone dispersed and it was done. So there were, as of this report, two particular drivers who sustained injuries. The one driver said that he has sustained an injury to the head by one of the rubber bullets. He says, as I was driving, the police came and stopped in front of me. He then came next to my window and shot me in the head. Another driver's car was also shot at. Says, I was shot along the convoy. I just heard bullets hit the back window of my car. Sure. But it seemed like all of these drivers were making their way to, this is specifically Bolt's company offices in Bryanston yesterday. They blocked the office main entrance and they called on management to hear them out, but they quickly suspended operations for the day to submit a memorandum demanding the industry be regulated. And that was about it. They suspended it and they removed their cars after police reinforcements arrived.
Mm-hmm.
You know why it's worrying is whenever the taxis who actually, I mean, the backbone of this country is the people that come from township, etc., to come and clean houses and whatever and do manual labor for most of us, is when those taxis strike, no violence, right? The police are, where are you to be seen?
Yeah.
These guys do it. Does anybody not find that interesting? And oh, once yeah. again, that
double standard.
That leads, it's
double whew. Standard. I want to just turn our attention quickly to something else. I don't know if you saw this, but this is very disturbing. Just when you thought 2020 couldn't get any worse, someone sent me a picture of Amy Schumer, who's planning to put out naked pictures.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine what that would do for a year that's already gone to shit? If Amy Schumer... if Amy Schumer starts...
Why would that be bad?
Why would Amy Schumer being naked be bad?
God.
Sia, uh-huh. Sia, why is murder bad? I mean, really, why is the devil the worst person in the Bible? I mean, really, Sia, must we go over things that are already established facts?
And Amy also, Schumer. Why does she want to release naked pictures?
Oh, I don't know. It could just be a meme. it could definitely be a meme. Please, if Amy Schumer does that, that would be, then I quit. Then I will never go on the internet again.
You know, there are just people who have a bad rap, and Amy Schumer's one of them. Do I find her funny? No. Do I think she just has a... She just... I don't know why people don't like her.
Because she steals people's jokes.
And she's...
That's out now.
And she's revolting. Let's just be honest.
That's what I was waiting for.
She's jokes,
I mean, probably people are accused of stealing jokes. So why is she revolting? Shame, man.
No, just revolting.
She is insufferable.
She really is.
Okay. Schumer or Anne Hathaway? Choose between one of them.
Yes. Ooh,
you have to have sex with one of them.
Okay. Death. I definitely is Anne enough. Hathaway. Because, I mean, I don't have to. Anne Hathaway is annoying as hell, right? But she doesn't look horrible. Amy Schumer is annoying as hell and looks horrible. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
right. I'm a monk in that situation. I choose Tibet.
Yeah. You're,
speaking of monks, I saw this very cute thing when we're talking about memes now with Amy Schumer. But I saw this very, you know, the yin yang sign, the little white part of the circle and the little black part of the circle. And someone sent that to me, and it says the white part is do no harm, and the black part is take no shit. And that is kind of like a comic. That's a good position to occupy from a point of view of your interactions with other people. Do no harm, but also take no shit. If you can find that perfect balance, then you've done well, don't you think?
I don't think that will be like, that will catch on as much as, you know, eat, pray, love and whatnot.
You think do no harm and take no shit isn't necessarily as strong as eat, pray, love?
Oh, no. I don't know. I don't see that on T-shirts just yet. I don't see my father. My father. Oh.
Oh, we get an update on Pastor Sangweni.
Does anyone know or care that we have surpassed 200 days of lockdown? Because my dad made a thing of it yesterday.
He's counting, huh?
Today is day 201. Let me find the message. I thought it was great.
Was his message also inspirational?
Yeah. Is he back preaching in front of the masses yet, Sia? Level one is level one.
I don't know. But he says for day 200 yesterday, he sends us a photo of some random tree that has a massive boulder next to its trunk.
Yeah.
So I guess you can already tell where this is going.
Yeah.
Then he says, this tree is a symbol of overcoming odds on day 200 of lockdown. It's caught between a rock and a hard place, but it chooses to grow. Oh,
Spain. Amen. Yes.
I love it.
It's not what happens around you that matters. It's what happens inside you.
Now, see, I want to point something out to you. How come if Oprah Winfrey of the Oprah Winfrey Show and founder of the New Earth Church, who is the Antichrist, as we know, how come if Oprah Winfrey says those kinds of things to you, you're like, gospel, yes, preach, 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 sister. Amen. But your dad's, your own father sends you just as inspirational, just as meaningful, I think just as beautifully poetic a thing as that. And you are dismissive and disrespectful. Why, Sia?
Oh, I don't, like, I was just thinking about what he had to do to find this. Did he Google a tree stuck between a rock and a hard place? Then he started to just thumbsuck every single cliche you can find.
It's not
cliche. Why did you ignore Gareth's great question?
Yes.
That's nowhere near as ridiculous as some of the stuff Oprah does. No, like, it does not scratch the surface of Oprah and Gail sitting in a well-lit room with her mango orchard behind her, telling you how if you breathe in positivity, come on, give the reverend a break.
This was way too corny.
I would rather have your father's corniness than Oprah Winfrey's outright lies.
I mean,
please let me put you in the family group. I'll exit, and then you guys can be stuck with this. Crazy.
You're ungrateful. You've got an Oprah in your own family, and you're not appreciative.
Okay.
What a sterling man this Reverend Sangweni is. He really is a good man, you know? Despite the fact that he's produced this nasty child, he has done wonderful things and continues to do wonderful things, not only for his congregation, but by indirect means. Look at how he's inspiring me and Mbulelo this morning. We're not easily inspired, right, Mbulelo?
Not at all. Not at all. So some people have said I'm an ice king.
See, and yet Sia's father's goodness has shone through, and even you and I are in a position to appreciate it. Sia is ungrateful.
I agree, is
a prodigal son.
Those words warm the cockles of my heart, and here we have Sia shunning a man who gave him life.
Yes, Sia, you'd be ashamed of yourself.
Also, these family calls that I just can't take too long and be bothered for anymore. My parents were sharing the struggle of trying to set up a WhatsApp line for the church so that people can book a spot in for the church services. I don't know if they've started already or they're planning to, but now they're only maximum 60 people, I think, that they're allowing inside. So now you have to book your place. Do you want to go to church?
Yeah.
No. So you must talk to the Lord in that way. I'm thinking, no, I can't be bothered to help out there.
Oh, Sia, so much cynicism from you. What's happened to you? What has happened to you?
You know.
Okay, we got lots of things to talk about. So let's get into some of these other things. I saw that Parktown Boys High, and we've obviously spoken about them before, but it's worth mentioning that the principal, Malcolm Williams, was actually fired just this week for his role in the Enoch Mpianzi death trip where the kid drowned. You remember that horrible story. And now the Parktown Boys High principal has been fired.
It's 9 months after the fact. Can you believe it? You know, so much happened in 2020. We lost count of all of this. But the Gauteng Department of Education was the one who announced this yesterday and then announced that he was fired. The department says that Malcolm Williams, failed to ensure a roll call was maintained throughout the trip and also undertook the trip without prior approval from the head of the department. So that's how he's accountable for this, and that's why he's had to be fired. But the family of Enoch Mpianzi says that the firing of the principal is not enough, and they, in their statement, they say the family welcomes the dismissal but feel it's too little too late. The family wants justice, and the principal's dismissal is not justice.
So what do you think they want, the family?
I think they're speaking on the point of pain and hurt. It's understandable, yes, but you know, it's a point where it will never be enough, because I'm sorry to say, you'll never see your son, your brother, your nephew again. And the horrible thing is, nothing will ever be enough to bring someone back or to, you know, have their place back in your heart. It's
I don't know how to approach this, because there are not really very many material things that you can do to make a family in such distress feel better. And I know it's been 9 months and they probably just with the passage of time will start feeling better eventually. But imagine losing a child. It's not, that is nothing to scoff at. That is a difficult thing for any parent. The most difficult thing anyone who's been through it would usually tell you that you could go through. I'm not sure, you know, firing the principal, people are being held responsible. I would want that if I were the parent, but as they say, it's not enough. You've got to ask what else, what would be enough? I know that they've decided that the Gauteng Education Department are also to blame, and they want Panyaza Lesufi fired as well. I don't know if we can, if we fired everybody who was involved in this, I still don't think it's going to be enough to make them feel better. So there has to be something that can be done. And I know that for some people, you know, we've got this this ugly tradition in this country of people paying off someone for the loss of someone in their family or their life. You give them money. You know, we've had situations where someone has been killed either by accident or with malice, and there's been some sort of settlement in a civil suit or in a negotiated settlement where people get paid. I've always disliked that idea. Not because... You know what I mean? It's just like it's kind of tacky. It to me, it almost feels like you're replacing the person with money.
Hey, Barbara Bush, let's not forget.
Excuse me? What happened there?
She killed somebody in a car, drunk and driving.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's a real thing.
But you tell me if you see things the way I do. But when you talk about people being held accountable, I don't think it will extend to the rest of the Department of Education. I don't think it will extend to Panyaza Lesufi being held accountable at some level. Because the fact that the Department of Education was the one spearheading all of these announcements yesterday, they even had their spokesperson who made a big thing of the fact that Malcolm Williams, the principal, had been charged with three allegations of misconduct from this incident, and he was found guilty of two of those allegations. To me, it kind of says, whether you think this is right or wrong, but it looks like the department is saying, yeah, he's the one, he did all of this, and we're done with this.
Yeah. Well, it is important, though, to have that. Like, obviously, the situation with the family, that's a different thing, is we've got to have the axe fall on somebody, because this is why you get paid the most money, you know, is if you get paid the most money, it's not for when times are going well. When things go wrong, you must take the blame. That's why CEOs get the most. It's not for when things go well. It's for when these types of things happen is where were you then?
That's a good point.
Mm.
Would either of those things have changed the outcome of Enoch's unfortunate death is a question that we've been posed here. And no, obviously not. Graham says,
but well, I think,
yeah,
I think Hillary means the roll call thing.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, looking at the sequence of events, the way things happen, I think it could have, because, you know, one thing that came out in this story is the fact that the team, the staff, weren't really certain of the number of boys who were on the trip or the number of boys who were at a specific, activity. So that simple math, I think, would have made a difference.
All right. Well, listen, we've got to get to Blind History. Look at the time. So this morning on Blind History, we returned to South Africa, which we have been neglecting for some time. I think we did Shaka Zulu, we've done Jan Smuts, and today we thought we'd look at the man who the Kruger Park is named after. Ironically, I would have been in the Kruger Park today, but that's been cancelled. Paul Kruger. His real name was Stephanus, but nobody ever called him that. And I thought this guy would be boring. I was not that excited to cover him in an episode. We've also done, who else? We did Pixley, Kai Sakaseme, and here's Paul Kruger. So I think we've done four people who are from South Africa. And we'll cover many more, obviously, in forthcoming episodes. But this guy was around at the turn of the century. And in some ways, he made the Republic of South Africa a possibility some years before it actually happened. But you've got to hear the story, because he actually led a pretty fascinating life. And nobody ever called him Stephanus, but his name, Paul Kruger, has become synonymous with the Kruger Rand, Kruger National Park. And he died in Switzerland, which a lot of people don't know, on the banks of Lake Geneva. And the part in between the beginning and the end there is quite something. So the story of Paul Kruger now on cliffcentral.com in this latest episode of Blind History, which is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters with my co-host, Anthony Medera, who's a history nerd like me, and he's the MD of Taylor Blinds and Shutters. We're going to be recording new episodes every week for you, so don't miss any of them right here on cliffcentral.com. A sullen statue stands in a grassy square between the Old Raadsaal, the Palace of Justice, and the line of spaza shops in our capital city, Pretoria. It's always covered in pigeon droppings and washed occasionally by the rain. The face of the statue is that of a man raised to believe that suffering was the way to heaven. A man whose stern, glum expression betrays a life of adventure, pioneering, battle, and struggle. His house lies within walking distance. It's now a museum, and his body lies only a stone's throw from that. He was the man they called Oom Paul. This is Blind History, Season 4, and we're already on, I can't believe it, to Episode 4. And we're talking about someone today who's a lot closer to home. You know, we get lots of people saying you should cover this person, you should cover that person. Today we're going to look at somebody who actually is buried just a couple of k's from where I live, and his name is Paul Kruger. There's a very famous statue of him on Church Square in Pretoria, which somehow has stayed there. Pigeons don't give it any respect, and I've seen it once or twice, but I haven't really given much thought to Paul Kruger before this, I'm embarrassed to say. How about you, Ant?
Yeah, I suppose I love Kruger National Park, and so I suppose that's where I've got it, or maybe the Kruger coins. But other than that, I haven't really looked too deep in it, except, you know, what we learned in history when we were younger.
Well, it's time for us to find out a whole lot more about Paul Kruger. Anthony Medera, Gareth Cliff, and Blind History. So if you've lived in South Africa, you would have heard the name before, but it probably doesn't mean that much to most of us. He lived between 1825 and 1904, so a little outside of living memory. They called him Oom Paul, and he was the president, chiefly, of the Zuid-Afrikaanse Republiek, the early South African Republic, mostly in the Transvaal at that stage. That's kind of the most important top-line stuff about Paul Kruger. I must tell you, I found his early life a lot more interesting than his political life later on when he became president. He was descended from a woman called Kretua, who was a slave girl who was brought from Malaysia. There were a lot of Malay slaves brought to the Cape Colonies, and he grew up somewhere in the Karoo, actually. It was like the northern Western Cape, that area.
Yeah, it was Colesberg area.
That's right. And he seems to have come from a family of some repute. He also was descended from Pieter van Meerhof, who was quite a well-known Dutch settler. The family had been in the country for some generations already by then, and his father, Kasper, and his mother had him in the Cape somewhere. I think you're right, Colesberg or something. But that's not where he started making history.
Not at all, but he had to grow up very fast because his mother died when he was very, very young. He was 8 years old. So his dad basically brought up him and his brothers or his siblings. And then his dad decided to join the Great Trek, who had been moving up from the south and from the southwest. And when they moved through, they joined on and basically crossed the Vaal River.
There's quite a cool story about that. So Hendrik Potgieter, one of the famous Trek leaders, came through the town where the Krugers lived, and he convinced Paul Kruger's dad that there was a possibility for independence from the English. They weren't particularly anti-British, but the idea of building their own country, of pioneering their own land, was really what pulled the Krugers in. And you know, Paul Kruger was a young man at that stage, very young, but he learned to hunt very quickly. He learned to ride horses immaculately. He learned about life on the veldt. And, you know, you think about the fact that in 1835, so this is a very young man, he went and took part in a battle called the Battle of Vegkop, which was in Heilbronn in the Free State. Now, listen to these numbers, and just to give you an idea of how difficult it was to be both a member of the Matabele tribe under King Mzilikazi, but also to be a voortrekker. On the 9th of October of that year, Mzilikazi sent 5,000 Matabele warriors to attack the voortrekkers. Now, the ratio of Matabele warriors to fur trackers was 1 to 150. And somehow, remarkably, miraculously, these fur trackers managed to win. And Paul Kruger was a young man. He was in his teens, his early teens, and he was loading guns, and the women were loading guns, and there were only probably a handful of fighting men who could actually fire the weapons. And they still won. I mean, this is just, if you think about that ratio, it's quite remarkable.
100%. And if you look at Mzilikazi's warriors, they were notorious. They were famous for being fearsome, you know, a fighting army.
Yeah, also famous for being quite shit at battle, if you ask me.
Yeah, I suppose. But I don't know, you know, obviously the guns versus spears, that's always played a role during those periods.
Yeah, I mean, actually, there were some guns in the Matabele contingent as well. But what happened was that out of those 5,000 warriors, many of them were just sheep and cattle robbers who joined in. And then once they got their plunder, they left. So two farmers and 184 Matabele died. The rest obviously left and ran away. But in spite of their loss, apparently the spoil was great. So the Matabele managed to plunder 50,000 sheep and goats and 5,000 cattle. So they may have lost the battle, but it seems they won economically.
Yeah, that sounds like a great war.
Yeah.
So this is what he knew, because he was already hunting at a very young age, as you mentioned earlier. And often when he went hunting, his rifle used to backfire or something went wrong with it. And his thumb was blown off on one occasion.
Yeah. So apparently he shot a lion at age, he said 14, but one of his friends who was there said he was only 11 at the time. I mean, he shot a lion. And the incident you're talking about was actually an elephant gun, which is a substantial piece of artillery. And it blew off his left thumb. But the best part of the story, I don't know if you know this already, but he went home to the camp afterwards with like half of his thumb blown away, and he put it in turpentine. That's how you made it better. And then it wasn't healing, and he felt that his arm might go gangrenous, and the doctor said they're going to have to amputate the arm, and he said, not a chance. And he took out his pocket knife, and he cut off his own thumb with his pocket knife.
Well, that's correct. And when the incident happened actually in the bush, he asked his hunting party if anybody had a pocket knife for him at that stage. And they said, no, we haven't. But then correctly, as you said, he went home and cut it off. So
wow.
He was known at this stage of his life to be fearless, very brave, fearless in his hunting expeditions and also, you know, when he was with the commandos.
Well, he may have been fearless, but he was also really uneducated. I think he only had 3 months of proper education in his entire life. And that just proves to you, you know, we often give Jacob Zuma the gears for having only completed up to standard six. But here's Paul Kruger had 3 months of formal education, and he still became president of the Zuid-Afrikaanse Republiek. They settled in Potchefstroom and then obviously in Rustenburg later on, an area which is filled with natural outcrops and natural features that are named after the Krugers. But their family farm, he actually got at 16, which was the custom at the time, he got to choose a farm of his own at the foot of the Magaliesberg. And that house is still a national monument today. Well, the property is, certainly. And in fact, it's one of the places, and we'll get to this later, it's one of the places they say that they may have lost or hidden or stashed the Kruger Rands, the Kruger Millions. But he first of all married Anna Maria Etriazia Duplessis. I mean, these names are just fantastic. And he went off to the Eastern Transvaal with her. And then they returned later on to Rustenburg, but she had caught some illness, and she and the infant child died.
In those days, it wasn't unusual to marry early. I think his dad and mom married when they were 15 and 11.
Wow.
Because they normally didn't live very long. The women were very scarce in those days. So he had to go get his first bride from a very far distance. And there was a story, be it legend or not, that he had to cross the Vaal River in full flood. He had to actually swim across it to be able to go and get his bride.
And we complain about Tinder.
Exactly.
So no problem. He got married a second time, also to a Duplessis, but this one's name, take this down, Gesina Susanna Frederica Wilhelmina Duplessis.
Tani Sunny.
Tani Sunny. And they had 7 daughters and 9 sons. And she lived all the way to 1901, dying only 3 years before him.
Tani Sunny obviously was particularly voluptuous. They're actually quite harsh on this young, round woman.
Today we would call that fat shaming.
Exactly. And yeah, but they said she was not a pretty girl, but he loved her. So, and they spent the rest of their lives together. And they said the soft, round woman that would later be affectionately known as Tant Sunny.
he became a field cornet, which is like a magistrate or an officer, when he was very young. He joined the Volksrat, also at a very young age, and played a role in a quarrel between two of my ancestors, which I really found interesting. You know, the minute history becomes personal, it seems to mean that much more. So I'm a direct descendant of Stefanus Skuman, who's called the Stormfuhl van die Noorde, who was a red-bearded, quite aggressive, nasty man. He didn't have a lot of friends, but he was a force of nature. And Martinus Wessel Pretorius, who's also an ancestor of mine. And I didn't know that Kruger had played this role in trying to bring them together a number of times. In fact, he did that with the end goal being that he wanted to unify the Afrikaners into a new republic. He took part in the famous Sand River Convention with Andries Pretorius, who was actually a major influence in his life. He developed quite a relationship with the older Pretorius, Andries, the guy who'd won Blood River and after whom Pretorius named. And he admired, he said, his resolve, sophistication, and piety. And piety especially was something important to Paul. He was a very religious man. He became a commandant general in the army then, which is kind of like the most important officer in that army, and eventually vice president in 1877.
Very, very young, he managed all these different positions.
Yeah, it's quite a remarkable life. And you think that he was out there, you know, hunting lions and taking part in battles in his teens, and then going into politics and living a really full life. It makes me feel like such an underachiever. He became vice president in 1877, and that was when Britain annexed the ZAR into British territory. That was mostly because they saw that gold was becoming the big thing in South Africa, and they were greedy to make sure that their hands were all over it.
The British played on this undereducated part. They saw him as backward, superstitious,
yeah,
a stubborn old man, and then grotesquely ugly, and often called him a literate peasant. So they were hardcore. Whereas the European continent loved him. When he got to Europe, he got a hero's welcome, which is incredible. I mean, when he got to Marseille, there was a significant amount of people there to receive him. And then the same is in Holland.
Well, in some ways, they treated him much like we think of Nelson Mandela today, as a freedom fighter, because here he was, this man who was standing up to the mighty British Empire and trying to get independence and sovereignty for his own people. So in some ways, I suppose that contrast has been borne out in history many times. One man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist.
And he did make a massive difference. I think he was one of the first to rise up against and start the resistance against the British.
That's absolutely right. And he sent deputations to London to plead for independence and sovereignty for the ZAR, and they were ignored. And the First Boer War broke out just after that. And it was really a fight for independence from Britain.
But he'd gone over to England a number of times and gone to Europe. And on the second occasion that he went to Europe, he actually met Otto von Bismarck, you know, the famed Bismarck. And he took a balloon ride over Paris, which was a massive highlight for him.
Wow. That's tremendous. I mean, you see, again, these lives intersecting. All these famous people who kind of met each other because they were alive at the same time and they were important enough to be in the same room.
Correct.
Well, he became president eventually, and that was when he succeeded in going to London and pleading with Britain for independence. And they actually recognized the South African Republic then as a separate independent state. But it became an issue that Brits were pouring in to the ZAR, or the SAR as it was at that point. And they were coming in mostly because of gold on the Witwatersrand. And, you know, Cecil John Rhodes and Maitland and people like that were very much in favor of sending British prospectors. They were prospectors who were coming to try and find their fortune on the Witwatersrand.
But immediately the Falk started calling them Uitlanders, foreigners.
That's right.
And treated them, actually, the Volksraad treated them very, very badly in that they had to pay massive taxes and they didn't get the same rights. And there was quite an interesting story about the Jewish people. And he called them God's chosen people. But there was an instance when he was surveying the city. This is of Johannesburg now.
Yeah.
Each church was allotted a certain number of stands. And it just so happened that there were double the amount of Christian churches to synagogues. And then they asked why, and he just basically said they could only receive half the amount of land. It seems that you saw the humor in that because they only read half the Bible.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that he was a religious man, but they were very Old Testament type Christians. You know, the Hervormde Kerk, which he was a founding member of, we call them the Doppers in South Africa. That church is well known for really being a very Old Testament-based church. They don't allow music in church. They're quite joyless and very Calvinistic. But he was one of the guys at the very beginning of that movement. And that's where a lot of the reputation that he has for being this deeply serious, quite grumpy, humorless, and bland human being comes from. And he was all of those things, but just not to the degree that he was caricatured by the British.
Definitely not. I mean, there was one instance where he built a church and then he went onto this roof that had just been built and stood on his head in front of everybody. So he did some strange things as well.
Well, the Uitlanders were a big problem, and he was re-elected three times on the Uitlander question. The Jameson raid, the famous Jameson raid, happened in 1895-96, and that was embarrassing to the British. It also led to the Second Boer War, obviously. And after that Second Boer War, Kruger left for Europe in 1900, and he refused to return home. He died in Switzerland, of all places, overlooking Lake Geneva, in a reasonably nice house at the age of 78 in 1904. And he was buried there, but then they dug him up and they brought him back to South Africa. And he's buried in Pretoria at the Helder Akker, which is about a stone's throw from his house.
But Gareth, there's a bit of controversy behind this, or quite a lot, in that he deserted his fellow countrymen at the time that Lord Roberts, so Lord Roberts was basically just at the edge of Pretoria about to take it over. So he basically got out of there, and he stayed for quite a long time in the Eastern Transvaal. He had a train that he stayed in, and I believe that he was carrying his money bags or whatever they might call it, and they crossed into the Portuguese frontier down to Lourenço Marques, as they called it. And then his wife got very, very ill, and when he gapped it to Europe, she didn't join him. So, you know, that must have been a devastating time in his life, seeing the last of Africa. You know, he would probably believe very much that he'd never see it again.
Yeah.
And leaving his wife of 50-odd years.
Yeah, and part of the story is also that on his flight to Maputo, which is then known as Lourenço Marques, he was actually basically held hostage on a ship as a political prisoner for a month until Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands intervened and gave him safe passage, where he obviously went first to France and then to Holland, and spent quite a lot of time in Holland. He was very close to the Dutch royal family. I mean, he spoke Dutch. You know, Afrikaans was still a nascent language at that point. He also spoke a little bit of English, but interestingly, he could speak Setswana and Sesotho almost fluently.
Correct, yeah.
I think that one of the things that struck me about this guy, Paul Kruger, is that, again, there's an intersection between his life and the life of Jan Smuts, which we've paid some attention to in a previous episode of Blind History, because he actually appointed Jan Smuts at a very tender age as state attorney. And upon meeting Smuts for the first time, he remarked to another man who ended up writing it down that he thought that this man had great prospects and would turn into someone quite formidable. And that's interesting because, of course, they were very different personalities. And what they ended up embodying was such very different things.
And Louis Botha, which we haven't discussed too much of, but he was very much key in that actual period now where Kruger went into exile. And he was, you know, Kitchener came with a surrender document for them to sign. And it was very interesting reading this, Gareth, on the surrender document. The Boers requested a representative and not a military government, that the Boers are allowed to retain their firearms, Dutch language to be maintained, the Dutch church to remain unchanged, and obviously the public trusts and orphan trusts to be looked after, no tax on farmers, and amnesty to all at the end of the war. And actually, the British accepted that. But then Louis Botha came back and said, look, but the Boers didn't accept that. So the war carried on for another 2 years.
He's well known, obviously, for a number of things. The Kruger Rand, which is a famous bit of gold currency. It's probably the only gold in South Africa you can legally own. Kruger statue in Church Square, which I mentioned. Kruger House, which is in Pretoria, which is still a museum. And of course, the Oom Paul pipe, the pipe that he used to smoke his tobacco in. It's a famous style of pipe, which they say was especially developed for him.
Sure. I wonder what was the shape of his face or his nose.
Well, I'll tell you something. That Oom Paul, he was not much to look at. And in almost any picture from his youth right through to his very old age in Switzerland, he was not a looker. I think old Sonny had a tough time.
There was one famous South African poet that said, the image hewn from the cliffs blow by blow is how they described him.
So overall, Not a pretty picture. A bit of a cantankerous personality. A mostly formidable human being by any guy's estimation. And someone who just wasn't to be messed with at a time where the strong survived and the weak were just cut down. And I'm kind of proud that I know a little bit more about him.
I agree 100%. And what I'm very proud of is the fact that he was a hunter, but he also, like many hunters, looked to conserving for future generations the wild animals that maybe we would have never seen if they carried on hunting the way they did.
Absolutely. And the Kruger National Park is widely acknowledged as one of the most far-sighted ideas at a time when no one was really declaring nature reserves. And this guy decided to chop a huge piece of what could have been profitable farmland right out and say, sorry, this is going to be for the animals. And that's remarkable. I mean, Paul Kruger was a real prototype South African pioneer in every sense of the word. Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interestingly enough, he says he only ever read one book, and that was the Bible. But he apparently could recite whole chapters of the Bible from memory. So clearly, this is the difference between education and basic intelligence, right? Is if you are smart and you don't have a huge amount of software input in terms of education, you can still make an enormous difference in the world. And he clearly did. So one book, the Bible, and he was also, because of that one book, a flat earther until the last day he claimed the earth was flat.
Sure, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
CliffCentral.com